Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. AGLCA and our Admiral sponsors, Dog River Marina and Boat Works, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guide and Magazine, Green Turtle Bay Resort, Marina Life, Richardson's Map Tech, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, and Skipper Bob Publications invite you to join us as we explore the Great Loop every Friday morning with a show chock full of information that's useful to you whether you're dreaming of, in the midst of, or planning a trip around the Great Loop. And don't forget to visit our ship store at www.greatloop.org ship store. Thanks and enjoy the show.
Good morning, everyone. This is Steve. Janice asked me to kind of fill in for her because she's a little under the weather this morning, but she is on here if anybody has a real important question for her.
As if I know anything about engines.
Yeah, well, that could be. They run. Anyway, our guest hosts today are Captains Chris and Elise Caldwell from Captain Chris's Yacht Services, and they're going to talk about engine maintenance. The title of it is, Your Engine is Overheating, What Now? Me, I call a mechanic, but that's up to you. They also do on-the-water training for new cruisers and general training for anybody that needs it. So why don't you all go ahead and get started?
Good morning. First of all, I want to tell you that you're going to hear a little bit of wind because we're at anchor on the Treasure Coast on one of our training trips in a great place called Hole in the Wall, where the dolphins have been swimming around our boat this morning, and we saw a manatee. Then I also want to tell you that you can't always call a mechanic because sometimes you are in the middle of nowhere, like we are right now. So that's what we're going to talk to you today, what you can do when you're not a mechanic and all of a sudden that engine overheats. So go ahead and take it away, Chris. Tell us all you know.
Good morning from the aft deck. We want to first tell you about how a marine engine is cooled. All marine engines that are below deck are water-cooled engines, different than the engine in your car that's got an air-cooled radiator. I also want to make note that some people may have a little generator, like a Honda generator that's air-cooled, that must stay outside on deck for two reasons. One, it needs a lot of air to cool it, and two, it's a gasoline engine, so it must remain outside of a closed space. So going back to the first topic is any engine below deck is a water-cooled or a heat-exchanged engine. The two type of engines that you'll have on board your boat below deck are generators and propulsion systems, like your main drive engine, which might be a Yanmar or a Volvo or a Cummins, a Ford or a Perkins. Generators, you use a generator to make electricity, to make 110-volt AC electricity and 220-volt AC electricity. And the generator is making that electricity mostly to recharge your batteries and to operate the air conditioners on board your boat while you're sleeping at night. So for that reason, generators have automatic shutdown systems, meaning you're sleeping, so you cannot watch a temperature gauge. The generator itself has some smart diagnostics where if the engine temperature gets too hot, there is a switch that will turn off the generator and save it from overheating. And I'm not proud to say it, but if you're cruising, it's going to happen to you. Last summer, our generator overheated at about 4 a.m. and turned itself off, and the air conditioner quit, and we all got hot. What happened that time was the fan belt popped, and I'm using the word fan belt. There is no fan, but it's a water pump belt, and it had popped. So fortunately, I had a spare belt, and it took me about 15 minutes to take the old one off, install the new one, start it up, and have the air conditioning to finish sleeping until breakfast. So generators have automatic shutdown systems. The other engine on board your boat would be a propulsion engine. And keep in mind, we're talking both gasoline and diesel engines. So a propulsion engine is what drives the propeller shaft, and that engine does not have a safety shutdown system. It has a dashboard with a temperature gauge, an oil pressure gauge, a tachometer, or an RPM gauge. And as an operator of the boat, it's your responsibility to monitor all of those gauges and see what's happening. If your temperature starts to rise, you'll need to take action to prevent the engine from overheating. Let me talk about the cooling system. On the generator and the propulsion engine, you have two cooling systems. One is called a closed-loop system, also called a freshwater recirculating system, which has either antifreeze, which is the older terminology, or the newer terminology is coolant. So just like the engine in your car, you have antifreeze or coolant, and it recirculates throughout the engine and goes through the radiator in front of your car. Since we have below-deck engines, we cannot have air-cooled radiators. We must have water-cooled heat exchangers. So now we've got two systems. We have our recirculating closed-loop system with antifreeze or coolant, and then we have our open-loop system that brings in seawater. Pardon me, we live on the coast, so we call it seawater. If you're in the lakes or the rivers, they call that raw water. So you bring in water that the boat is floating in, and it circulates around the outer periphery of your propulsion engine, and it goes through a series of heat exchangers, and those heat exchangers will take the heat out of the coolant or antifreeze, and that raw water is circulated through other heat exchangers on the engine, and then it is blown out the exhaust pipe or the exhaust hose on the stern of the boat. Another thing I want to throw in there, outboard motors do the same exact thing. So looking at your outboard motor, you'll have a little stream out the back of the engine, so that's proving that you have water circulating through the outboard, cooling the outboard, and then blowing out, and that's why it's called an open loop or a once-through water system. Steve, I'm going to take a break for a sec.
Okay.
And then we have a word from our sponsor, Pantaneous, this week, Beth. Beth?
Well, how about if I started?
Yeah, go ahead.
You want what makes Pantaneous America's yacht insurance special? Pantaneous America provides coverage and flexibility without any hidden or implied warranties. Licensed in all 50 states, Pantaneous America offers unparalleled service through our international network of offices. Pantaneous America allows for extremely liberal navigational limits. Pantaneous America's experienced worldwide claims staff is there for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. With no deductible for fire, lightning, and total loss claims, Pantaneous America is always by your side. Call or visit us today and ask about our special offers for Great Loop Cruisers. 914-381-2066. Pantaneous America is a proud commander sponsor of AGLCA.
Well, that was more words per minute than I've ever heard Beth do.
That's because it was a long spot this time.
No.
Okay, so if you're ready to pick up, that would be great.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and continue explaining the raw water system or the open water system, open loop. Think about your boat. You've got a seacock, which is the valve in the bottom of the boat that opens and closes the water inlet. The water comes in through the seacock, and the first place it goes is to a strainer. The purpose of the strainer is to strain out any debris like rocks, sawgrass from the Florida Everglades, lawnmower grass if you live in a condominium where they blow grass into the water, or shrimp or fish or jellyfish or any other debris that you might suck up through the bottom of the boat as the boat is operating. So you've got the seacock, then you have the strainer, and then it goes into the actual water pump on the engine. The water pump is a rubber vane, self-priming water pump. And by saying self-priming, that means it's got a terrific suction, so it will suck the water up. It does not need priming. And also, because it has a rubber vane, you can assume that the fact that it is rubber, it's got a life. Sometime that rubber will become stiff, and it may break a vane off. And if a vane breaks off, then you're going to lose your pump efficiency, and also that rubber vane is going to travel downstream the water system, and it may obstruct water flow, causing a little overheating problem. So when you're starting your engines, and if you've got a lot of people who have winterized their boats because they're in storage on dry dock somewhere, first thing you want to do is open the seacock. Second thing you want to do is look at your strainer to make sure it has water in it. And then you can start the engine. And let me caution you, if you're starting the engine and you are in the engine room, I advise you to wear the earmuffs or ear protection. As the engine starts, you can use a flashlight and look inside the globe or the plexiglass cylinder that houses the strainer, and you can see a swirl. So you're witnessing water is flowing through the strainer. Then it goes into the rubber vane impeller pump, and then it follows the circuit around the engine. And let me give you some ideas of where that water goes. It'll go into the rubber vane impeller pump first. Then it will go through the heat exchanger for the antifreeze coolant. It will go through the engine oil cooler. It will go through the transmission oil cooler. It will go through the exhaust manifold cooler. If you have a turbo, it will go through the turbo oil cooler. And then last, you have what's called a exhaust elbow or a water shower, where that water is now showered into the hot exhaust gas, and it cools that hot exhaust gas from over 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit to the neighborhood of 150 degrees Fahrenheit, which is low temperature. And then that mixture of exhaust gas and raw water travels out the rubber hose, out the back of the boat, and you can witness it blow out the back of the boat. Same thing for a generator, a propulsion engine, and also an outboard engine. Now, if you're operating the boat and the engine is at operating temperature, which is somewhere in the neighborhood of 180 degrees Fahrenheit, and you're curious about the water flow, again, put on your earmuffs, and you can use a flashlight to witness the water swirling through the strainer. Depending upon the placement of the rubber vane impeller pump on your engine, us old guys take two or three fingers and we'll touch the pump. And if it's cool, it should be about the same temperature as the water the boat is floating in. If you're uncomfortable or if that's not easily accessible, use an infrared temperature gun. And you can shoot that red beam against the back of the pump, and you can see what that water temperature is. And it should be 90 degrees or 80 degrees or even less if you're in a cold water climate. And keep in mind, that's what the water temperature is, and then your engine antifreeze or coolant should be around 180, depending on the engine manufacturer. So that's one thing, or a second way, that you can check that your water pump is indeed operating. Now, we're talking about two types of overheating. One is sudden overheating, where you'll either hear the engine make louder noises, because there's no longer water going out the exhaust pipe, and it's going to make very loud diesel noises because the water is part of the muffler system, and if there's no water, there's no muffler. The other thing, you'll notice your gauge on the dashboard will spike. It will jump up to a very high temperature. So now, with sudden and drastic overheating, you need to take evasive action. With a single-engine boat, you need to shut it down and anchor as quickly as possible. With a twin-engine boat, you need to shut down the overheated engine and operate the boat with the second engine. So that's one thing to think about. The other type of overheating is called temperature creep. Like the temperature is creeping up, and that can happen for a few different reasons. If your boat has not been used for a very long time and it's sitting in the water, you may have a lot of barnacles and algae growing on your propeller, creating a excessive back pressure against the engine, and the engine just can't run fast. That will make it overheat. Another thing, if your engine has not been serviced in a long time, the heat exchangers, the actual coolers that cool the antifreeze, coolant, turbo oil, transmission oil, and the exhaust manifold, if those coolers are fouled with scale, meaning they're less than 100% efficient, you may overheat at a high RPM. So if you have temperature creep, the best thing you can do is slow down the engine, and it might take 2 or 3 minutes for the temperature to come down. Keep this thing in mind, and this is very important. If you have a temperature creeping up, do not shut the engine off because you have stopped the cooling water flow. If you have temperature creep at a high RPM, slow the boat down to about 1,000 RPM. You'll maintain water flow, and by maintaining water flow, you're going to have an effective cooling system in operation. Then, when the engine cools down to its proper temperature, then just operate the boat at that slower RPM until you can get to a safe harbor, and then start investigating the reason that the temperature crept up on you. So keep in mind, temperature creep is something that you can outsmart. If you have drastic overheating, then that's a catastrophic event where your rubber vane impeller may have failed, or your strainer may have plugged up full of jellyfish, or plastic bags that come from the grocery store that escaped and drifted around in the water. So let's review a couple of problems for overheating. Your water pump belts may be worn out or pop.
And I can tell you a little story about that one in the case of our generator. It was about 5:30 in the morning on a training trip in July in Florida. You can just imagine how warm it was. And all of a sudden we woke up because there was no noise. You have this humming of the generator, the humming of the air conditioner, and we thought, wow, the air conditioner quit. And then we said, wonder why the air conditioner quit. And then we realized the air conditioner quit because the generator quit. And in this case, the generator, when it overheats, it just shuts down. There is no choice. It's what Chris likes to call a dumb engine. I think it's a smart engine. It just shuts itself down because there's no choice to be made as far as are you driving, are you trying to dock the boat, are you in a jetted inlet or something like that. So inside of about, I don't know, maybe 12 minutes, we identified the problem. We found the replacement belt, repaired it, got it started, and our guests only remember a faint change in harmonics. They really don't even remember waking up. But, boy, they would have woken up if we had no more air conditioning in July at 5:30 in the morning. So that's one case where it was great to have a spare part and where calling the mechanic wouldn't have worked for us at all.
Okay. some other things to think about. I mentioned about belts wearing out or popping. We talked about the impeller. The rubber vane impeller may have dropped off one or two rubber vanes and broken. So you don't just replace the impeller, but you have to consider you're operating a jigsaw puzzle. If you pull the impeller out and two vanes are missing, then you have to ask, where did they go? So the answer is, you have to go find them. You've got to take apart the downstream hose and see where that hose goes, and it goes into some type of a cooler, which is properly termed a tube-in shell heat exchanger, or you can think it's just a catacomb of a lot of small pipes. But you'll need a pair of tweezers and a flashlight to look in there and to find those rubber pieces and pull them out. It's vital that you find those rubber pieces and pull them out, because if you don't, you'll be restricting water flow. Even if you have a brand new impeller, those vanes will restrict your water flow 10, 15, 20%, which means you're going to lose that much efficiency in cooling. Now, another thought about putting the new impeller into the pump body. Everybody thinks, okay, does my engine turn clockwise or counterclockwise? Do I bend the vanes this direction or do I bend the vanes that direction? The answer is it does not matter. The answer is take your rubber vane impeller, the brand new one, use a little bit of hand soap, something that you may have in the galley or the bathroom, and lubricate the impeller where it's slippery and twist and turn until it slides into the hole, and then push it in all the way with the wooden hammer handle to make sure it seats in the back. And I want to caution you, there's a little rubber plug the size of a dime. If you don't know what that is, do not throw it away. That's called a sand plug. That goes inside the rubber impeller against the shaft to keep sand from chewing up the rubber vane impeller shaft. So put that new rubber plug in there. Now you have to take paper towels and clean off the pump body face to get all that soap off of it. And then put the brand new gasket on and then put the cover back on it. When you put the cover on it, there may be 6 or 8 volts. So treat them like you do changing a spare tire on your car. You do the star system, 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 3 o'clock, so you get all those snugged up, and then you go around and you get a good ump on every one of these bolts or screws. And an ump is an old mechanics term for torquing it. You put your wrench on there and you just go ump, and that's tight enough. And once you've got everything back together, again, confirm that your seacock is open and start your engine. Now, if your impeller went in backwards, when you start the engine, those rubber vanes will flip over to the correct direction. So that's why I say there's no concern about putting the impeller in right-handed, left-handed, clockwise, or anti-clockwise. Simply does not matter. The next thing let's talk about is the strainer. Let's say you've sucked up some jellyfish or plastic bags or a bunch of seaweed into your strainer. You want to clean the strainer out, and the easiest or smartest way to do that is to turn off the seacock, open up the top of the strainer, pull the basket out, and dump that into a little bucket that you may have on the boat so that you can catch all of that debris and make sure it does not fall in the bilge, because you don't want that debris to foul up your bilge pump. Once you've cleaned out that basket, if it's got a lot of slime or mud or algae on it, you may take an old toothbrush and scrub out the strainer to make sure it's clean and water can flow. And then reassemble everything. Before you put the lid on the strainer, make sure the gasket or the O-ring is lubricated and clean. and then you clamp it back down. When you clamp it back down, next thing you do is open up the seacock. So now water will come into the boat. If it does not come into the strainer, then you may want to crack the top of it or loosen the top of the strainer to let the seawater flood the strainer and then close the top again. And when you start the engine, you'll see water swirling through the strainer, go into the impeller, around all of the coolers, and out the exhaust pipe on the back of the boat. The important part for you to see here, number one is the water swirling through the strainer, and number two, something people don't think about, if you see air bubbles going through the strainer, that means that you're sucking air through the lid of the strainer. If you're sucking air in the strainer, that means that air is going to go to the impeller, and that air will cause the impeller to overheat, and it may fail and break a vane. So if you see air coming into the strainer, use a pair of pliers and just very delicately tighten the lid a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, until you no longer see air. It's a delicate balancing act. You don't want to get too tight because you may break something. It may be a case where you just have to put a new gasket or a new O-ring in the strainer to prevent that air leak. So make sure there's no air leak. Another thing I want to talk about is temperature creep in the Florida Keys or the Bahamas. If you operate the boat in very shallow water, in July, August, and September in the tropics, the engine is sucking up hot water because the sunlight is making all that water hot. So if you're sucking in 90-degree water, your engine is going to run warm. So understand that the engine is not malfunctioning, but your raw water is hotter than average. And as soon as you run the boat into about 12 feet of water, that water is about 10 degrees cooler than 6 feet or 8 feet of hot water, and your engine creep will go back down to normal operating temperature. So that's where you just have to outsmart the water that the boat's floating in. Another thing to think about is high RPMs. If you get in your boat first time for the new season, if it's been stored on land or stored floating in the water, if you run high RPMs, you may have temperature creep because your coolers are fouled up with debris. Just like you have scale and rust in anything, you can have that inside your coolers. And also, we didn't talk about sinks, but your coolers may have a pencil zinc, which is like a finger zinc or a pencil zinc. It does the same function that the zincs do on your propeller shafts and rudders, but as the pencil zinc in the heat exchanger dies, it creates a gray mud, and that mud can be a water flow restrictor. So that can be another cause of overheating. But to solve that, you can just slow down the RPMs and the temperature would decrease and you're okay. I'd like to wrap up with saying that we will be in Norfolk for the Great Loop Rendezvous this May, and we will bring our raw water cooling demonstrator. So anybody coming to the rendezvous can drop by our booth. We'll be glad to show you this entire system in the hotel so we don't have to go down to a boat. And the Great Loop Rendezvous will be May 7, 8, 9, and 10. So it's 7, 8, 9, and 10 in Norfolk, Virginia. And we'll be up there with the raw water cooling demonstrator. Also, I'd like to mention that AGLCA has invited us to return to the radio airwaves on Friday, March 23rd. And we will be broadcasting live from the Palm Beach Boat Show.
What we're going to do is talk to you about what we've seen at the show, anything new hot topics, things of that sort. But we'll also talk to you about how you might want to think about walking the show, whether you're a boat owner already, the different technologies that you might want to look at. Sometimes it's very valuable to go to a boat show even after you own a boat. And then what kind of things you might want to look for if you are in the market for a boat when you go to a boat show. And you'll probably have a different view of how to look at brand new boats or used boats when you go to a show after we do our little talk. And we hope to be able to chat a little bit with Rob Dorfmeyer, the publisher of Passage Maker magazine, because we'll be at the trawler port tent for that.
We're looking forward to it, Chris and Elise.
Chris?
As far as the rendezvous goes, Chris and Elise from Captain Chris Yacht Services will be giving two seminars, and they are always the most popular seminars of the show. So don't forget to register for the rendezvous. The block of rooms are going quickly, so if you intend to come, make sure you register and you reserve your rooms quickly. Chris and Elise, thank you very, very much.
Hold on one second.
Go ahead, Steve.
Chris, before you get away from us, I wanted to ask a couple of different questions. And one is, how often should you pull the heat exchangers and coolers and have them pressure tested and washed in acid to get all the gunk out?
I hate to say a very good question because it is, but everybody says that. There's different rules of thumb. If you operate your boat, then people think that the heat exchangers will foul sooner than later, and that's an open discussion. The other thing is keeping your pencils inks changed and monitoring. You can open the end cap on the heat exchanger, and you can look in the end cap of the heat exchanger to see if they're fouled or if they're plugged. An owner maintenance item would be to stick a toothbrush in there and scrape out all of that zinc mud. It looks like gray mud. And then you can use an aluminum welding rod. Aluminum is softer than copper. Your heat exchanger is made of a cooper nickel, which is a copper-based alloy. So you can use that aluminum welding rod. I think it's a 3/16-inch diameter, and that's the term that we've all heard as kids, where you rod out the radiator. I mean, you take a rod and you shove it back and forth and back and forth, and you're getting any major buildup off. The next thing, I would not advise to people who are not accustomed to boiling out radiators, but if people boil out their radiator, the term is actually by using a muriatic acid and water mixture in a plastic 5-gallon bucket, and you take that heat exchanger and you dip it in the muriatic acid water mixture, and you have a chemical reaction that boils. And be careful because it spits and splatters and it'll mess up your clothes and burn your hands. So we advise you to take your heat exchanger to a professional for two reasons. One, if you've never done it before, it's not a good idea to do it because of the mess. And number two, if you've got an older heat exchanger that's 10, 20, 30 years old, the little spotter welds, where all those small cooper nickel copper tubes are welded in, those welds are aged. And you don't want to be too aggressive with your acid bath because you may violate one of those welds and you may do more damage than good. Did that help answer your question, Steve?
Yep. The other question I had is, as a maintenance item, should you change the impellers every 2 years?
Again, a difficult answer. If you read the engine owner's manual, they want you to do it once per year or once per every X hours. The idea there being the engine manufacturer wants to protect your investment in their engine, and they don't want you to overheat their engine. The part of the answer is you can open up the end plate on the impeller cover, and you can look at it with a flashlight, and you can stick your finger in there and wiggle the vanes. And if they feel rubbery and pliable, they should be okay. If they feel stiff, I would encourage you to replace them. Now, the question of how often also deals with how much money you're willing to spend. These rubber impellers are anywhere between $30 and $50 a piece. We advise everybody, when you're looping, to have at least two sets of impellers for every engine on board the boat. And by saying every engine on board the boat, we have a twin-engine boat and one generator. So I have two impellers for my generator and four impellers for my propulsion engines, which is two apiece. The rubber vane impellers, you can't predict how long they'll last, but if you do dry storage in the wintertime up north, those rubbers will freeze and then they'll fall out in the spring. My opinion that those don't live as long as the impeller in the southern boat that never does freeze. So that's another curveball that you'll have to think about. But the easiest thing to do is to have an idea of how long your rubber impeller will last, and nobody can give you that answer, and then change it on a regulated interval, or if you know that you're making a loop, you can run the intercoastal, the whole East Coast, all the way up to New Jersey. And then New Jersey, if your boat's 40 feet or larger or 4 foot draft or deeper, you're going to run in the ocean up the Jersey coast into New York City, through New York City. So if you haven't changed your impeller in a long time, I think you need to change it somewhere in the Chesapeake Bay before you put yourself in the ocean and in the high traffic area of New York Harbor.
Thank you, Chris.
How's that for an answer?
Perfect. That's what I was hoping you'd say.
Okay, good, good.
And I think we're about finished now that I've ran us into overtime.
Okay. Thank you again. We appreciate you inviting us on the radio, and we'll talk to you in a few weeks from Palm Beach Boat Show.
Super. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.